All right, so just in that one short clip, we see both sides of the discussion, that that the perpetrator is guilty until proven innocent. We see another comment that that women will use that. And it's not in this clip, but one thing that we hear in focus groups is that both sides of this argument and everyone in between want to see the documentation that the woman reported it, and that the company documented the report. And that's, I think, something that goes along with the greater awareness from the Me Too discussion, is that folks in focus groups are emboldened or feel that emboldened to report these claims, and that leads to the desire to see documentation. So why why the concern for the due process? It's possible that it's a shade of history. I won't get to everything today, but in the paper you'll see discussion of the history about corroboration requirements. History has seen a shift into the common law away from quantitative requirements to what we have today, where a single witness's evidence is sufficient to prove a fact. There was a period of a counter move in the 20th century where states here in the U.S. started requiring corroboration for this specific category of crimes, sexual assault and rape. And what was driving that, we know from at least one New York judge, that it was this idea that ladies lie. And that was the parallel tracks the comment in the focus group that women will use these types of complaints. Since Title VII's enactment in 1964, states and federal law is moving away from that, and now sexual harassment complaints, sexual harassment cases are in line with essentially all other federal cases, that the testimony, the evidence of a single witness is sufficient to support a verdict. So let me skip ahead. Uncorroborated. What do we mean? I get the sense from reading public commentary that people don't know. It doesn't mean what they think it means. Traditionally, it was a standalone category of evidence, auxiliated to direct evidence and circumstantial evidence. Today, that distinction's a lot less clear. And as we know from Desert Palace and other cases, that we don't need to necessarily spend a lot of time drawing the fine distinctions between circumstantial, direct evidence, and other kinds. The basic definition of corroborative evidence is evidence that strengthens or confirms, that makes something more certain. There's a broad and a narrow or formal sense of the word. I'm going to focus on the broad sense because, as I said, there are very few formal corroboration requirements. There are a couple in the federal rules for things like co-conspirator testimony, not to be hearsay and so forth, but generally that's the exception to the rule. Again, take a look at the paper for some of the history on this, but the takeaway from the English common law as it developed and crossed the Atlantic over here to the U.S. is that the credibility does not depend on the number of witnesses. Generally, the testimony of a single witness can be legally sufficient to support a verdict. Conversely, the mere assertion of any witness need not be believed, even if unimpeached. And it's sort of cut off at the bottom. It says all rules requiring two or more witnesses are the exception to the rule. None of that is going to sound surprising to anyone practicing today because that's all reflected in our pattern jury instructions. And those are quoted in the paper. I'm just going to skip ahead to them. But we've got the Fifth Circuit pattern here that says that witness testimony is weighed. Witnesses are not counted. The testimony of a single witness is sufficient to prove any fact, even if a greater number of witnesses testify to the contrary. And there are similar instructions from the 3rd, 7th, 9th, and 11th circuits. And I'm just going to take a brief aside here to mention an article that I saw from a district judge in Iowa, Judge Mark Bennett, who practiced employment law before going on the bench, who is an advocate, a proponent of his model plain English witness credibility instruction. His point is that we instruct jurors that they are free to believe or disbelieve any witness that comes on the stand, but we give them basically no other guidance on how to make those determinations. And that's in the context of rich social science indicating that sort of the typical indicators of untruthfulness that we all rely on in day-to-day life are unreliable. Things like shifty eyes and looking away when speaking. The social science tells us that those are not necessarily reliable indicators of truthfulness. And so Judge Bennett has put together a model instruction that he says tracks the social science. And so I'm going to commend that to you. Take a look at it. See if it's something that you might find.